Welcome to Contingency FM. In this episode of Contingency FM, we are joined again by Dr. Shalab Srivastava, who is a renal consultant at Sunderland Hospital and a senior clinical lecturer at Newcastle University.
Hello.
And today we're going to focus on advice for the academic side of medicine. So you've had quite a lot of experience in academic medicine. I'm just wondering if you could sort of briefly outline, how did you get into academic medicine? Why did you get into academic medicine?
See, I've always wanted to be part of research, and a lot of us think that we want to do research, but never quite know what it entails.
Mm.
So initially I approached, during my time at Barts in London, I approached the professors and the senior consultants there to help me understand or be part of projects. And I was lucky enough to have some really good supervisors, so they offered me clinical research, the case reports, writing up interesting cases, and that helped me in just thinking, getting thinking about how to publish work, ask a question and get it answered, do literature reviews, because if you're doing a case report, you have to do a literature review that goes with it. And it builds up your ideas of research. And then you can decide what really excites you. If it's bench-based, lab-based research, you should try and, approach the right supervisor for that. And if it is clinical research, that's where you should go. There are trialists who run clinical trials. But the most important thing is to try and get some experience. So after the initial time in doing this clinical research, for family reasons, we moved up to Newcastle from London. And unfortunately, everything I had built up in London sort of was undone. So I had a project which was ready to go, but I had to give it all up at that time. So when I moved to Newcastle, I had to re-establish those relationships with the supervisors, and I approached three or four of them here to see if I could get involved in their research projects. And I was accepted by one, John Sayre, who is a professor of medicine and nephrology at Newcastle University. And what he did was he gave me a project which I pursued for a year in my own time while doing clinical training during my registrar years. And it was a lab-based project. And what we did was we identified an interesting family of Bartter syndrome and did some novel genetics and analysis on this family. That gave me an idea about lab-based research, because I'd never done any lab-based research before, and it really got me interested. It also helped me understand that you have to have a relationship with the supervisor, because together you will approach a funding agency in future to fund your PhD. We then, after completing 1 year of sort of lab-based research in my own time with John, we applied to four funding agencies, one of them being Kidney Research UK. The others were MRC and Wellcome Trust. And I was lucky enough to be funded for 3 years for a PhD by Kidney Research UK, researching the role of cilia in cystic kidney diseases. And that also helped me get a further funding, a travel grant from the European Renal Association, with which I went to Utrecht and learned novel techniques, lab-based techniques over there in Utrecht. Came back, some of them had never been done in the UK. So we pioneered use of human urine for epithelial cell culture, so we can culture kidney cells from urine. So it's, yes, and it's it was never done before in the UK.
I didn't even know you could.
Yes, yeah, correct. So it was a very successful project, but again, there were a few failures, peppered along And then I finished my PhD, did some papers, and established my own genetics clinic. Mm-hmm. And I continued to be involved in research.
Before we recorded this, we've just had a bit of a chat, and there was sort of three things you mentioned, which you've kind of already touched on. I was just wondering if you could dive into those in a bit more detail. So the first one is supervisors, the second one is a project that you believe in, and the third one is learning to accept failure. So supervisors, so who are supervisors? How do you know who to chat to, and why are they important?
So supervisors, for any research project which is leading to a higher degree or is going to lead to a paper, you will need someone who will work as your mentor, really. I would highly recommend that if you are thinking of research, you should think of doing an MD or a PhD, preferably a PhD, because it gives you enough time to really put your mind to that project and get something out of it. The supervisors will help you at every step of application, for your funding, and then your annual reviews, your day-to-day challenges which come with any research. And then finally, you know, once you're on the other side of it, complete your PhD and have a glass of wine with your supervisor, which is what I did when I finally passed my wine.
Oh, brilliant.
So, supervisors are extremely important, and you should be very careful in finding a good one.
Yeah, and how do you know who's good?
You have to first approach several supervisors who you can align your ideas with.
Yeah.
So you may have some ideas. The supervisors may have something slightly different.
Mm.
So you have to learn to be flexible, to align your idea of research with theirs.
Mm.
Or find someone who is aligned to your ideas, and that may not be in your local area. So you should be ready to move if you really believe in your research idea.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, you have to learn to be flexible and try and align your ideas with your local supervisor. The next is pedigree of your supervisor. So you have to make sure that you see that the supervisor has a good track record of attracting external funding, of publishing their work in peer-reviewed journals, because if a supervisor is not attracting external funding or publishing their work, then really it is very difficult for you to see your...
Because you're emulating what you see in them, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. In future, that's what you want to do. You want to get externally funded PhDs or research degrees and also publish your work, because that's really helpful for the scientific community.
Mm.
So the supervisors should have two of those very important, you know.
And how do you, is that information available online?
You can look them up. So you can look up their publication record on PubMed.
Yeah.
Search them up and see what they've published.
Mm.
And also the university website will have their own personal statement.
Yeah.
So their own personal statement, or the best thing is to go and meet them.
And how important is it that you sort of click with them sort of on a person-to-person level?
Oh, it's extremely important.
Yeah.
You really want a supervisor who's friendly, approachable, who you can really rely on. Because research is just full of failures. And if you don't have a supportive supervisor, you will find that you're dealing with too many odds. And having a supervisor who is supportive, who has done it before, it's vitally important because they can guide you through failure. Because setbacks are a day-to-day occurrence in research.
So just to explore that a bit more then, because that kind of natural segue there into sort of failure, can you expand a bit more about sort of failure in academic medicine, and sort of in what forms does it occur, and how do you overcome it?
Yeah, so I don't want to be very negative. So
yeah.
the most important thing to remember is that research is very, very important. And it's actually very fulfilling. So that's the most important, that's the overarching theme. But at every step of research, you will have certain failures, and you have to be ready to accept those.
Yeah.
The first is finding a supervisor. So I approached three or four people and got accepted in a way by one. who wanted to give his time. Because remember, this is their time. You're asking.
Yeah.
You're not their PhD student yet. So they are putting some of their own time in developing you as a potential future PhD student. So there is that. So they should be ready to accept you, and one out of three accepted me to help me develop an idea. The next was developing a relationship over a period of 1 year. So I was doing my clinical training and tried to do some bench-based research in my own time, which was difficult. I had a young family, I had a five-year-old son and a newly born daughter, and I was in a full-time clinical job.
Yeah, it's a lot to balance.
Correct, yeah. So I used to get up at 7 in the morning, rush to the lab for an hour, and then sometimes go in the evening after work. So there was that. But that, you know, that led to my supervisor recognizing that I was ready to work hard on this, and I was really interested. And that led to him helping me apply to external funding agencies. So we applied to the Wellcome Trust, we applied to MRC, and we applied to Kidney Research UK. And I was shortlisted for the MRC interview, where I couldn't succeed and didn't get funded, but I was shortlisted for Kidney Research UK and was lucky enough to be funded by them. So they funded my research with nearly £250,000, which was
it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, and they're trusting you with it. So you have to be really, you have to really believe that you will finish what you've started. And that is why it is so important to really commit yourself to this. You must not do it for CV building or you know, ticking a box. Because remember, this money has come from a charitable donation.
Yeah.
People have run marathons, you know, people have knitted jumpers, whatnot, you know, and donated this money. So you should make the most of it. And if you're getting an opportunity to do something like that, you must really, really put your heart and mind to it. And the next challenge and failure, because we're talking about that, comes during your PhD project or your research project. There will be experiments that don't work, there will be results which are not what you wanted, but remember that you have to learn to just believe in your idea. If a if an experiment doesn't work, think of another way of doing it and talk to your mentor, because they've done it before. Try and establish external affiliations. So my mentor in Netherlands, in Utrecht, Rachel Giles, She is an amazing woman and a really supportive supervisor. And helped me a lot, because when I got to Netherlands, we were going to pursue a specialist electron microscopy technique. But after having got there, we realized that that microscopy technique is really not working, even in the hands of people who are pioneering it.
Right, okay. It must have been quite a disappointment having moved your life over.
Correct, yes, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
But then we spoke to the supervisors, and they said, look, we have to change track. And we changed track and learned 3D culture techniques. I learned 3D cell culture technique.
And that's the one you're talking about with the urine.
Yes.
Yeah. So that came back out as a huge success.
That did come out as a huge success. So initially I was actually, I was thinking, God, I failed before I even started.
Yeah.
Because this was the first year of my PhD.
Yeah.
Where I was supposed to learn this new technique and then follow it for the next 3 years. But that very basic idea failed. But then we decided, okay, well, we have to change track. And we did, and thankfully it worked. Sometimes, sadly, it doesn't. But you have to be ready to accept that. If it doesn't, please continue, pursue, complete your research.
Yeah.
Complete your PhD. Don't give up. Because after that, you will have many more opportunities to do good work. But what it teaches you is to do your background research well, to write well, to ask the right questions, and to persevere And that is really character building, I think.
Yeah. Just as you're saying that, just reflecting that the best ways to overcome failure is really flexibility and perseverance.
Yes, yeah. Yes, very, very important. I think you have to learn to be very flexible.
And a PhD or an MD or a master's in research, sometimes when you're still on the near side of doing that, in terms of you haven't done it yet, they can look quite intimidating and be sort of, oh, this is the be-all and end-all and this is represent my life's work. And actually what you're saying is often these things, they're almost university for or teaching and training for research skills. For the future, they're a passport to
Yes, that's the way to look at it. These are clinical. So my fellowship was called a clinical training fellowship. So they don't expect you to be, you know, the next big thing on on day one.
Yeah.
It is to train you to just do research.
And to do it seriously.
Do it seriously and learn the techniques.
Mm.
You know, after medical school and doing clinical training, we recognize that a lot of people have never done any research. Mm. And the idea of these clinical training fellowships, the research fellowships, is that during your PhD, you gather those skills.
Mm.
And then run with it in your post PhD period, in your postdoctoral period.
Mm.
That's when you really come
commence
your own work.
Yeah.
After having learnt a lot of new skills during, I think I changed the way I think after I did my PhD, and because it was in basic sciences, I then chose to do a postgraduate certificate in clinical research after my PhD to learn more about just the funding structures, the way clinical trials work, because they're quite a different thing from bench research. And again, you know, you have to do translational work, which will benefit patients.
Mm.
You know, in the end, it's the patients who you're doing it for, apart from, you know, solving your own scientific curiosity.
Yeah. And in terms of, so any brief advice on how to find a project that you believe in, any sort of like top tips?
It's it comes, sometimes you fall into a project. You know, very few people I would think start out thinking this is it for me.
Mm.
So please keep an open mind.
Mm.
Remember that on a day-to-day basis, you have patients coming with a variety of pathologies, and you have to be able to see certain new trends developing, you know, new pathologies. So it always, you know, go back to that basic questioning of everything you see.
Mm.
At least choose one topic in a day or in a week.
Mm.
You know, you don't have the time to question everything you do in a day.
Yeah.
Some of these are bread and butter business stuff. But once a week or once a day, choose a question with which you can run and do an up-to-date search or a PubMed search. And then you will come to the realization that actually, I quite find this quite interesting. And then you can do further a literature review, see what are the trends developing in that, what are the unanswered questions.
Mm.
In that chosen line. So for me, in cystic kidney diseases, it was the role of cilia. In fact, I worked on one protein within the cilia.
Mm.
So it can be very niche.
Mm.
It can be a very generalist thing, you know, database research.
Mm.
So looking at large databases. So again, you will come around to it. Just have to keep questioning and asking those questions. Yeah.
A couple of last questions. The first one is, you mentioned a few sources of places you can get funding. So
yes.
MRC, what is that?
Yeah, so MRC is the Medical Research Council.
Right.
They are the largest funders of any scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
And the application process, it runs, you know, twice a year. You have to apply to them, be shortlisted, and you know, you'll be called for an interview.
Mm.
But remember that there is a lot of support when you do certain these applications. The new, so in my case, it was the Newcastle University. I was mentored just during the application process. And once I was shortlisted, they arranged mock interviews for me. And some really, you know, high profile researchers helped me in getting the right mindset for the interview. So I had mock interviews not once but thrice, which was organized by the university.
Wow.
So there is a lot of support.
For, I didn't realize that.
Yes, and I'm very thankful for that, because if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't have been successful during the interview. Because, you know, you sometimes these are the first time you've ever walked into an interview like that. After, you know, going for your medical school, you've never done an interview.
Yeah.
For a long, long time.
And what other organizations exist?
So there are research, the dedicated research charities. So if you're interested in Cancer Research UK, Kidney Research UK, you know, every specialty these days. And we are lucky in that, that there is a charity that supports that individual subject. So in my case, it was Kidney Research UK. But then there is a smaller charity called PKD Charity. Which just supports polycystic kidney disease research. And I've been lucky enough to be funded by them as well. So so there are those. And then there are some worldwide charities like the European Renal Association. They're not charities, but they're organizations who help.
And there's NIHR there as well?
There is NIHR, which is the National Institute of Health Research. And they fund largely clinical research. They, you know, if your research idea is more basic science, NIHR generally will, you know, will not fund unless, you know, there is a translational element to it. So but NIHR, again, they gave me money in parts as part of their Green Shoot program, which helps my clinical research.
So there's lots of organisations out there and lots of opportunities. And my last question is, are there any things looking back that you wish you'd done differently or wish someone had told you before?
That's a good question.
It's a closing
thought. So, yeah, I just wish I had... I'd planned my research slightly earlier because because of change of location, I left it till too late. I think I did my PhD after the ST6 year, which is very late. But that was because, you know, of family reasons. I had to move. So my piece of my advice would be to think of it earlier. It's never too early, really. Even as an F1 and F2, you should start thinking about research, getting involved in doing it in your workplace, and approach supervisors early on. And yes, I wish I could have would have done it earlier, but then I wouldn't have met John.
So it worked out.
So it's again, you know, there are two ways of looking at it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, no, it's been really, really useful. I think there's some really great advice there for anyone who's looking, especially to doing any clinical or basic science research in the future. Thank you very much for listening.